They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Analogy time. If Pepsi is to Coke, what is to the artificial intelligence ChatGPT? I'm David Brancaccio. First, there was ChatGPT, the artificial intelligence that may not be T.S. Eliot or Toni Morrison, but which writes copy that sounds pretty close to some of our coworkers on Slack. Now there is Bard. Google has joined the competition to integrate artificial intelligence into internet searches. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
The release of ChatGPT late last year left Google and other internet giants scrambling to catch up. Bard is Google's chatbot. In a blog this week, Google CEO Sundar Pichai said the company is opening up Bard to trusted testers first. Microsoft is reportedly trying to integrate ChatGPT into Bing, its search engine. The idea is to change internet searches. So if you type in how to plan a wedding, you won't just get links to wedding planner sites. Instead, the chatbot will walk you through it. The technology is still a work in progress, though. Chatbots can't tell what's true or false or biased. They can give you false information or repeat hate speech. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Bard, B-A-R-D, like the Bard of Avon or the college on New York's Hudson River. Will it become a verb to Bard, like to Google? Shares in companies owned by the huge India-based firm Adani Group are rallying today, rising 15% in India today after a long two-week collapse. They're still down 46% since the 25th of January. A U.S.-based investor group called Hindenburg that places bets on stocks it expects to drop had issued a report accusing the Adani Group of essentially playing games with its accounting. Right now, Adani's companies have lost more than $100 billion in stock market value, and billionaire chairman Gautam Adani, who until recently was the third richest person in the world behind Elon Musk, has lost about half his fortune. Let's get some more context from the BBC's Arunaday Mukherjee, India correspondent for the BBC. He joins us from New Delhi. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
What are a few of the pieces of this conglomerate so we can get a sense?
Well, this entire growth story of the Adani Group has been absolutely fascinating, including the man himself, Gautam Adani. He was a school dropout who went on to become Asia's richest man and the world's third richest till just over 2 weeks ago. He has business interests through various companies, seven listed companies in sectors like energy, ports, mining, oil, gas, defense, aerospace, and now also gently making forays into the renewable energy space as well. And he's involved in a lot of big ticket infrastructure projects, not just here in India, but abroad as well.
But we need to fully understand that it's not just an influential company. It's sometimes a little hard to distinguish between the Adani Group and India. The brands are almost wrapped up in each other at this point.
Over the past 5 years, you know, the flagship company of the Adani Group, which is the Adani Enterprises, has invested heavily in these big new growth sectors like airports, cement, copper refining, data centers, green hydrogen, if you may. So these are all growth heavy sectors where India has also generally been looking to drive economic growth through. So if he's seen as one of the men who is at the forefront of all these key growth driving sectors through which India wants to also reach its big economic ambitions in the world, then that is why a lot of link ups happen that look, Adani's growth, India's growth. And, you know, you'd remember in response to the Hindenburg report, the big denial from the Adani Group also said that this report was an attack on India, to which the Hindenburg Research Group said that you can't obfuscate allegations of fraud simply, you know, under the garb of nationalism. So nationalism has certainly been an aspect that has been discussed while we've been tracking the story very interestingly.
Now, there have been a number of prominent industrialists in India, and I think some government officials and the securities regulator in India talking about they don't see any signs that what's happening with the Adani Group is causing a systemic risk to markets in India and Indian business. Are you seeing any signs that securities regulators are actually looking into the allegations of accounting shenanigans at Adani?
Without actually naming the Adani Group All they said was, quote, there was unusual price movement in stocks of an Indian business conglomerate. They said that the markets, despite that, were displaying resilience and ongoing stability and that they were functioning in a fair and transparent manner. And they said they were committed to ensuring market integrity. But we've still not heard any kind of a formal inquiry that has been launched.
Arunade Mukherjee is India correspondent for the BBC. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you so much, David.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
This morning, we'll get the latest numbers on how much we're all borrowing, Federal Reserve numbers. Consumer credit last fall had jumped the most in two decades. As for reasons why, here's Marketplace's Justin Ho.
Consumer debt first started rising during the pandemic because people felt comfortable borrowing money, thanks in large part to the strong job market. But later, inflation picked up, says Kathy Bosjancic, chief economist at Nationwide.
And that's making people, especially even just on non-discretionary items, lean more and use credit more to be able to make those purchases.
Consumer debt levels have not yet gotten to the point where they're a major concern, says Shannon Seery, an economist at Wells Fargo. She says that's because people's pay has been rising, too.
When we put it in the context of income, these debt burdens still are pretty manageable from a macro perspective.
But Seery says consumer debt is rising faster in certain parts of the economy.
So balances of borrowers under 30 and in your lowest income quintile, for example, are now above pre-pandemic levels in terms of credit card debt outstanding.
Seery says lower income groups are starting to see their wage gains slow down. That means their debt will become more of a burden. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Our producers are Katie Barnfield, James Graham, Ariana Rosas, Alex Schroeder, and Erica Soderstrom. Our senior producer is Meredith Gerritsen-Morby. And you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.